Accession number 27804, Squadron Leader Ian Blair, Real 21. Now, what sort of duties were you doing? You're flying Spitfire II Mark IIs with A-Flight. What were you doing at Perrenporth?
By the time we got to Perrenporth, we'd left the Mark IIs at Rednall. We were on Spitfire 5Cs and Bs and Cs.
Now,
and they were doing things like convoy patrols. That was what the big thing was.
Hang on. Let me ask you about the Spitfire 5, the 5Bs and Cs. What difference was there between, say, a 2 and a 5C?
Well, the main difference I recall was that the Mark II was its starter system was a cartridge starter. You had seven cartridges in a breech mechanism, which you, when you pressed the button, you fired a cartridge and it started the engine. Whereas when you got onto the Mark V's proper, they'd done away with the cartridge starter and we had proper electric starters. The performance was slightly different, obviously, different engines. Can't really remember.
Did it make a great deal of difference, the performance? I mean, did it give you, you know, how much faster were they all?
No, I couldn't tell you really by comparison. I know that my Spitfire, the aircraft were subsequently derated, i.e. the boost mechanism was disconnected or engines were changed, and we were designed ultimately for low-level operations. The wingtips were clipped, and you heard the phrase clipped, cropped, and clapped. That was what the Mark V 5Bs and B was.
But that was later.
Pardon?
That was later.
Yeah, but not very much later, but later on in the progress. By the time we got to April, back end of April, 43, we had been flying on the squadron, not doing a lot, actually.
You said you were on convoy protection duty. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Well, it was just as it indicates, they used to detach two aircraft, and they used to go out and circle a convoy for an hour and a half, somewhere out either in the Atlantic and the approaches on the western side or in the channel, wherever they were. That's where you... You just flew round and round, two of you.
Now, were you looking for German aircraft?
Well, we were looking for raids. We were keeping the opposition away, hopefully. And if you remember, on the very first entry in my logbook, I think when I got to 501 Squadron, I mentioned that one of the very first trips, I did say, on the 6th of April, we were doing our search convoy. That's to do search patrol, looking for something. And we were jumped by two ME-109s. That was the first sign of the Black Crosses. But then these convoy patrols off Padanic and Port Reith and all down, right opposite Brest, across there. And
Now, did anything happen while you were on these convoys?
Yeah, well, we only got one. We got a scramble at one stage from Perrenporth, and we were vectored onto Focke-Wulf 190, but it was too far away to do any good, and we couldn't catch it. It says here, vectored onto 190, had a squirt at about 1,000 yards. I could probably hardly see it. That's what I wrote in my logbook. Anyway, the squadron moved then, subsequently, from Perrenporth at the end of April, middle of April. They moved up to a place called Lasham, near
Lasham,
near...
How do you spell that? Sorry.
L-A-S-H-A-M, near... It's in Hampshire, south of Hampshire. I can't remember where it's near now, without looking at the...
And that was in April.
Yeah, the end of it, middle of April. Lasham was a new airfield, being they were making gliders there, Hamilcar gliders, and we were that was our first introduction to our living under canvas at Lasham.
What was it like living in under canvas? You were in tents.
Oh, you got used to it. We had our gear. Those had been Boy Scouts. It didn't make much difference to us. But it was It was all right. It wasn't. It was things. Unfortunately, in the winter time, your clothes were permanently damp, you know. But there was nothing. In summer, it was fabulous. Of course, you had the tent flaps rolled up, and you had plenty of sunshine, and you know, it was all right in the summer. But the winter could be a bit damp in general. But that was the. That period of time, mid-April 43, was when the Air Force started to become operational as 2nd Tactical Air Force, in UK, 2nd TUTAF it was called.
Now, what was the role of 2nd Tactical Air Force?
Well, the role was to be in close support of the Army when the invasion took place. And we did everything at low level. Everything was at low level. We lived rough. The theory was that the pilots would do their daily servicing and move on to airfields, and they'd be looked after by another crew and so on and so forth. But it didn't work out that way for 602 Squadron, Auxiliary Air Force.
Now, is this when you got your wings clipped, when you were practicing?
Oh, the wings clipped, I haven't actually got that. I'll come to that in a minute.
Now,
this is not actually...
Were you practicing low-level flying?
Oh, yeah, everywhere I went, it lifted.
Tell us about low-level flight. What was it like, low-level flying, and what were the skills
you had to keep
needed?
Your wits. I mean, we were really low. And when I say low, none of this 150-feet nonsense. We were below treetop level, and you had to keep your wits about you. Everywhere you went at nil feet, and everywhere you reported, if you were in a... You had to report opposition. You had to observe as best you could things on the ground... And be able to describe. Eventually, you got to know the different tanks and the different types of armored vehicles and flamethrowers. I think it was the thing that scared me most of all was rushing right down the hog's back one day with the flight, and we crossed across the middle of a tank. It must have been a tank range or an exercise, where these tanks were squirting flamethrowing tanks, and a big burst of flame in front, and frightened the life out of them. It really wasn't very funny, but that's what we were doing. I was just looking at, we were doing low flying cross countries, battle formation, that's on the ground. By this time we'd changed our formation to finger four.
Can you explain that? What was that? Tell us about that. You talked about the other
one. Early on, when we were at Paramporth, we were doing... The squadron was... When they went out as 12 aircraft, you were in long lines of three fours and line astern. And when you became your battle order, the last two aircraft were weavers, i.e. they were... But then the technology or the tactics changed, and we went out... We changed to a finger four, which meant that if you put your fingers over your hand up, you'll see that they're staggered. And that was the way you had a space of about 200 to 300, sometimes more, yards between the four aircraft. The obvious exercise was maneuverability at low level, and the space between the aircraft gave you ample time to look and observe over the far side without worrying about being tucked up underneath the guy in front. It was a very flexible formation, because your tactics, if you were attacked, you could either break port or break starboard, or turn 180 degrees round, and you still had the formation the same, going in the opposite direction. It was a very flexible, and you always flew with one flight higher up sun and one flying below. That was the general tactic, so you were very well covered. This served its purpose right through after D-Day, I suppose, but as far as I was concerned, that was the, for the rest, from 1943 to 44, the whole year, that's the way we carried on.
Now, did you have any particular pals in the squadron that you made,
friends?
Well,
we're all pals together, literally. Well, nothing. Well, I suppose... I'm still in touch now with some of the four of the squadron pilots. We weren't actually pals. We were in the same flight together, and we all flew together. And if we had a stand down, we all went out together. But I wouldn't say Other than that, we had.
Did you mix with other sergeant pilots, or did you mix with the officer pilots?
No, we all mixed together. We all mixed together. I remember we had one Jamaican pilot, a flight sergeant Ferguson, his name was. It was just unusual, but we were a mixed group. We had Canadians, Australians, New Zealanders, Scots, Welsh. We had a complete conglomerate of pilots, and Frenchmen, of course. We had three Frenchmen, Captain Aubertin, Pierre Klosterman, and Jacques Ramlinger were the three Frenchmen who were all together on the same flight, if I remember right. And of course, Klosterman became famous, very famous, and Aubertin was one of our flight commanders, a very rigid disciplinarian, didn't like the two NCO types, Remlinger and Klosterman, wouldn't tolerate them being commissioned initially, refused to recommend them for commissioning, but the CO overruled them, obviously, because they subsequently were commissioned. Ramlinger. Now, Jacques Ramlinger was a nice guy, very pleasant guy. He was half English, half French. He went to school in England, played rugby for the Wasps. And Klosterman, who was born in South America, I believe, but he was an oddball. He used to walk around the squadron with a notebook, making notes. We used to call him Closet on the squadron. We used to say, "What are you doing with that closet?" And he says, "After a war, I'm going to write a book." And of course, he wrote the book, The Big Show, bestseller. And it's factual, really, basically. Most of it's factual, anyway. He's changed bits, put himself into some of the incidents that weren't his. But nevertheless, the book, the substance of the first issue is pretty much authentic because it was written down as it happened. But I'll come to him in the air a bit more later. Ramlinger just was a nice guy who just happened to be pally with Klosterman. They gelled together. But Klosterman hadn't arrived at that time. He came to us under a cloud.
Well, we'll come back to Klosterman.
We already got as far as Lasham. Well, Lasham... No, we were still practicing.
So it was basically practicing there. All you were doing at Lasham was training flights, no operational flights.
Oh, no, that's not true. We were doing a lot of training. We went to Lasham on the 17th with our 5Bs.
That's 17th of April, 43.
And the practice was such things as Low Flying Army Corporation. That was going out and wrecking army positions. Battle formation practice, that's this finger four turning about and all that sort of thing. Low flying cross country. We did a wing low flying cross country. Balbo, that's what he called it. Low flying practice. That was a whole wing, 36 aircraft flying along at noon.
Were there accidents?
Huh?
Were there accidents? It sounds dangerous flying it.
Oh, yeah, it was a bit hectic.
At tree level, yeah.
Well, you had to have one eye on your squadron flight commander or squadron commander, whoever it was, and one eye where you were going. And you had to know roughly, and you're mentally getting to know the landmarks and watching for other aircraft all round, because that was the whole essence of it. But then a 27th of April, we went on our... What did we do here? Oh, that was a cross country.
So what about the operational flights?
I haven't got to know. I didn't think we did any operations on in that period of Lasham. Apart from the convoy patrols.
So you were doing... Now, anything ever happened on those convoy patrols? Or was this just a...
No, it was just a defensive manoeuvre. We didn't... Some of the guy. I mean, only that one case, we got a scramble there, which didn't happen. Nothing came to it.
But still, a routine that you still had to do them, though.
Oh, yeah, we had to have standby.
It was a precaution.
We always had a readiness section. Various types of readiness, you know, 5-minute readiness, not very often, but 5-minute readiness where you sat on the end of the runway in the cockpit waiting. Didn't happen, fortunately, once or twice. Then we...
Now, what about... Can we talk a bit about life in the sergeant? Because you're going to get promoted soon. Your commission comes along soon, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What was life like in the sergeant's mess with 602?
Well, we didn't have a mess per se. We had a tent, you see. I mean, we were roughing it in the field. We were all down on the... You know, it was joint officer, NCO, aircrew accommodation. And so, but you didn't... The only time you got out was when you had a stand down, and invariably the weather was bad anyway, so it was just normal existence, you know. It's taken, you just had your three meals a day, and you just went about the exercises, whatever they were, did the chores. But I'm just looking, that's the whole of April we were doing that, and then I noticed at end of April we moved to Fairlop. I don't remember that. Don't even remember Fairlop. But Fairlop, we were still doing battle formations and wing formations, cross countries, air to sea firing. Gosh, truth, wing bombardment. We didn't have any. Ah, and it wasn't until the end of May. It was the end of May. I see we did a. I did a first operation, which was escorting 12 Mitchells. 12 Mitchells to Abbeville, a favourite stomping ground. Escort Abbeville, and it says here, close escort, which meant we were flying our 5Bs. Close escort, which meant we were flying the same level and same height as the bomber force, very close to them. And I see here, a direct hit on one Mitchell, remember that.
What happened?
Just disintegrated in front of my eyes. And there was two Spitfires lost. That was on that operation.
And what do you remember happening? I mean, what happened on the mission? You were flying in close formation, so happened?
We were just escort. We were flying close escort to this bomber force. I think the main object of that exercise was to encourage the opposition to come and attack us. But anyway, one Mitchell, I remember that very clearly. Mitchell just blew up. I've never seen anything like it in my life.
Hit by anti-aircraft fire?
Oh, yeah, anti-aircraft
gun. What caused the casualties to the two Spitfires, or did you not
know? No, it didn't, actually. I think they were shot down, obviously.
But you don't know? You didn't see that?
I can't remember. I know two didn't come back. One of them might well have been hit by fire. I was very close, actually, but I wasn't that close. I was probably about 400 or 500 yards away. It just... Poof.
What was it like at the anti-aircraft fire?
Yeah. That was the main. That's why we didn't like flying close. That's why the Spitfires didn't like flying close escort. You were always in the flak zone all the time.
What was it like in a Spitfire under heavy anti-aircraft fire?
No, very funny. We had a saying. We had a saying at some waggle. Our phrase was, smell the flowers. That was when the flak started. That was what the... Some wag always said, smell the flowers. And then you knew then the flak was about. But some of it was heavy. It depended on where you were going. Abbeville, this was obviously Abbeville airfield we were going for, the home of the, what do you call it, Yellow Nose Spitfire Boys, 109s, the Richthofen group of it. Well, yeah, we weren't very pleased with that. But anyway, so. Then come June 43, we seem to be still doing we did operations in between our training, you know. We did 5 operations.
And what type of operations?
Well, they're all close escort. You see, this is I can't find exactly when we clipped our wings, but it must have been around about this time. I thought I'd made a note of them. I'm sure I made a note of it somewhere. where we had clipped.
And what difference did it make when you had the wings clipped?
It made a heck of a difference.
In what way? Because I can't. I mean,
well,
I can't.
The difference it made basically to the aircraft was it could roll faster. But that wasn't the end of it. The trouble was that when they clipped the wings, they cropped the blower, and therefore your power fell off. You're all right from 0 to 7,000 feet, but after that, it was a waste of time. The engine was useless, literally. So when you're flying close escort, which was nearly always at 12,000 feet, then if you did a steep turn, your aircraft was wallowing like nobody's business, because without a supercharger, you lost. The higher you went, the more. But going from ground to ground, you could go from 0 to 10,000 feet in 1.75 minutes. But after that, the aircraft was useless. That's why we didn't like. Haven't come across it yet. I thought I had made a specific note.
So you're on these close escort. Was it always Abbeville area? Or was
Well, that's about it was the maximum range, actually. I'm just looking down. Cherbourg. Caen. It's all the Cherbourg Peninsula, you see.
So what happened to
And Poix. That's Abbeville. Poix. We know we knew that area pretty well. We didn't like it at all. Then we were flying out of. We've gone to Bognor Regis. I must have missed. Yeah, we went to Fairlop at the end of April.
Where's Fairlop? It's near it's Hampshire, is it? Fairlop's
Gloucester, isn't it? Gloucester.
Gloucester. Right.
Yeah, that's it. And then we moved. These were all airfields. You know, they were virtually hacked out of fields, and the Summerfield tracking was laid, and we just flew our aircraft in. And I mentioned early on the auxiliary squadron and the fact that they had permanent airmen. When we formed Second Tactical Air Force, the Ministry of Defence wanted to post these auxiliary men away from the squadrons, and they dug their feet in. A lot of them dug their feet in and said, in no way. Our terms of reference said we would stay with the squadron, which MOD had to go back and have a rethink. But
now, when did you move to Bognor Regis then?
We moved to Bognor Regis.
Roughly.
We moved to Bognor Regis on the end of May.
Yeah, and what was the airfield like there? Was that another one?
It was two fields knocked together and a Summerfield tracking put down and a few tents.
What is Summerfield tracking?
Oh, it's that, they call it pressed steel plate. You know what that is? It's the same type of thing, except it was netting rolled up in a bundle as opposed to plates, which was like glorified chicken wire and with iron cross member. It was probably about 10 feet wide. And they rolled these strips out, and the engineers did it. Rolled these strips out, leveled it, and put pegs in, so you could get three aircraft across it at any one time if you were lucky. Terrible.
So you'd be in tents again.
Pardon?
You were in tents.
Oh, we were in tents. Yeah, we were in tents right all the way through from now on, actually. So I'm just looking. June, we had got to Bognor Regis. That was a good location. It was the summer there. With Bognor Regis, we still were flying around at low altitude and formation practice, but we're doing sweeps in between Cherbourg Peninsula, Caen, the same. I've already told you these, bro.
That's the bit where it covers
June.
Both, doesn't it? Yeah.
And then July, we moved to Kings North. These were airfields. We were a member of 124 Airfield or something we called ourselves.
Kings North, where's that?
Near Ashford, Kent. I tell you, we're...
Another makeshift airfield.
Mm-hmm.
That was another makeshift one.
Oh, yeah. It was called... Lasham was called 124 Airfield. Fairlop was called 121 Airfield. And Bognor Regis 122 Airfield. 122 Airfield moved to Kings North on the 1st of July, 43, and we were there to the 13th to the 8th. What was that, a month? 6 weeks. 6 weeks. And all this was in aid of the 2nd Tactical Air Force, the ability to move from A to B with the short rate of knots. And I thought we were...
So just the moves were practice?
Oh, that was all... And all the flying was practice, you see. I'm just looking to July 43.
Any particular raids or missions
you
remember? Yeah,
July 43, we started off again. Kings North, we started off 18 Bostons to Abbeville, bomber escort. Nothing, engine cut I've got down here. Don't know what that was. And then we did 12 Bostons to Poix again. Marauders, oh, this is where the 9th Air Force got in the act, July 16th. United States Air Force, 9th Air Force. Abbeville, marshalling yards. And we got another fighter sweep on July 19th. A place called Saint-Omer. In France, a fighter sweep, two fighter sweeps. Yeah.
Do you remember anything about them or?
Well, nothing. Just said that. We just used the phrase about, meaning that the hostiles were about, but nothing. Sometimes they weren't. Sometimes they weren't. Our presence kept them away, I suppose, from the bombers. July, we had more bombers to Zeebrugge. The Americans, Marauders, Merville, another one, 21 Marauders to Poix. They gave them a fair old hammering around those parts of the world, or tried to. So we now got to July, August, 36 Marauders again to Merville. I says here, pranged well, plenty of flack. And then come August again, we had 36 Marauders to Bois. And then again...
But you don't remember these raids now, other than general terms. I mean, you don't remember the detail of such raids now, do you?
Well, no, as far as we were... Oh, I should have told you. We were flying close escort, or escort cover. That was our duty, so, I mean, these were all close escort jobs. Where we were flying alongside the, all close. That must have been when we had the five Bs, which were low-level aircraft specifically.
And you were supporting the Marauders, the American ones?
Yeah, 9th Air Force, terrible aircraft. They always flew at 12,000 feet. I never knew where they were going.
How did you get on with the Americans? Did you meet them much?
No, I never met. We never met them on the ground. But I have our opinion of them was that they were terrible navigators. They couldn't find, they couldn't find their way around very well, and we had to go with them. Of course, I've got three stories about the poor quality navigation of the Americans, which I, when I talked to the outfit called the Bodies of the 9th Air Force, I told them loud and clear that their navigation was next to useless, and I gave them three occasions, and they didn't take it too kindly. But the fact of the matter was that the fighter command were classified as being unable to navigate. But the basic principle, if the sun's on the right on the way out, it must be on the left on the way back. And every fighter guy knew that they got a mean course from the target area back home. But even if he never had that, if he flew due north and turned left after period of time. It must hit this island somewhere, but the Americans didn't seem to grasp that, even when there was no... We escorted a marauder from